Hello and welcome to Know Your True Self, a show dedicated to raising the consciousness of humanity. Today I welcome Sam Horn to discuss her new book, Talking on Eggshells, Soft Skills for Hard Conversations. Sam founded Tung Fu Training Institute more than 30 years ago when she saw the need for clear, stronger communication in corporations, government agencies, industry associations, schools, and nonprofits. The Institute has offered live and online training for employees of Capital One, Four Seasons Resorts, nationwide, as well as state and local governments. She is also the founder of the Intrigue Agency, which consults with business leaders and is a sought-after speaker. Let's get started. Hey, Sam, welcome to Know Your True Self. I'm so ecstatic to have you as a guest today.
Thank you. I've really been looking forward to swapping some stories and insights on how we can deal with difficult people without becoming one ourselves.
Oh, and what a time for that. I know every time I enter a meeting, a situation, it could be with business partners, new potential clients, family, friends, children, everyone seems to be going through so much. And although we are more inclusive than ever before, we're divided more than ever before. And that's very challenging. Tell us a little bit about your background before we get started into talking on eggshells, about the science and art of having difficult conversations and how that's exuded throughout your career.
You know, isn't it ironic? We're taught math and science and history in school. We're not taught what to do when someone accuses us of something that's not true or when someone blames us for something that's not our fault. And so, as you know, I wrote a book called Tung Fu more than 20 years ago, and it is how to deal with difficult people without becoming one ourselves. And my whole goal was to teach that art and skill of in the moment saying something that helps instead of hurts, and to handle challenging situations in the moment instead of thinking of the perfect response on the way home.
Awesome. So why are we talking on eggshells more than ever today?
You know, did you know anxiety can be defined in two words, not knowing? And most of us, once again, we're not taught what to say when people are arguing. We're not taught what to say when someone we really care about has a polarized political opinion that is the opposite of ours, and we put our relationship at risk. Do we avoid it? Do we talk about it? Do we end up in a shouting match? And so one of the reasons I think we do talk on eggshells is because we want to get along. You know, we want to turn strangers into friends. We want to have helpful and healthy relationships with the people we care about. Often, we just don't know how to do that.
Right. We talk a lot in this podcast about self-awareness, understanding where our thoughts are coming from, being observant of our unconscious mind or subconscious. But, you know, there reaches a point where you can be very aware of yourself, but we also have to navigate life. We're in all these different circumstances every day, so many circumstances, and we have to show up. And in your book, you talk about interpersonal situational awareness, which is really now taking self-awareness and bringing into the practice of meeting with people. Tell us a little bit about ISA and what that means to you.
I'd be happy to. And you know that I like to be practical. You know, we've talked about how we don't know what to say. So if I provide specific options, these aren't scripts. This isn't like say this and everything will be perfect. It's like, here are some options of what to do and say in that situation. Then in a way we can prevent conflict and promote cooperation. So unless people are driving, I hope they get a piece of paper and put a vertical line down the center and on the left put words to lose and on the right put words to use. So let's talk about interpersonal situational awareness, what it is, and then a situation that shows like how we can over on the left put be clueless. You know, it's like something's right. Happened and we are not reading the room. We are not paying attention to body language. We're not asking if what we're saying is welcome. We're not thinking that this person is going to tell us no the minute we stop talking. And if we are clueless, then essentially we're headed for a train wreck. So over on the right, here's what interpersonal situational awareness is. And then shall we share an example of how to do it?
Yeah, please. Let's do it.
Okay. Have you ever been on a rafting trip by any chance? Have you ever rafted down a river?
I've gone very gingerly down a river, yes.
Gingerly. Well, my first boyfriend was a guy named Gary Dubois. And I just talked with him about this recently because when you're rafting on a river, you don't just like, you know, row down the river, you are constantly paying attention. Your mind and eyes are on a swivel. It's like, wait a minute, I hear a roar ahead, and I know there's a rapid there, but it normally doesn't sound that loud. Let's pull over and scout it and see what's going on. It's like, wait a minute, this current is going to take us right into that canyon wall and flip us. Why don't I pull over here and avoid that canyon wall? And so, see, boatmen are constantly looking ahead, figuring out what could go wrong, and then taking proactive action to prevent it from going wrong. And I think we can do that in a business meeting. I think we can do that in a performance appraisal. I think we can do that when we're asking for funding. I think we can do that when one of our employees is not cooperating. Is that instead of just, you know, telling them what they're doing wrong, or instead of just telling them what we think or what needs to be done, is that we can read the room. All right, now, why will they resist this? Why will they say no? What's the situation? Is it 4:30 on a Friday afternoon and they're not even listening? And if we read those signals, then we are going to be able to show up and say something in a way that actually increases receptivity and reduces resistance. Your awesome. Thoughts about that?
I think that's great. You know, I think going into the room and understanding where people are coming from, what their hangups might be, what's going on in their life. You know, if we know they're dealing with stress in a certain aspect of the business and we're trying to get a raise, maybe their focus right now is trying to right the ship, and us trying to get maneuver our own monetary well-being isn't the right time. I think far too often we also go into rooms with an agenda. We're waiting for something to say. We're waiting for that moment, and we don't come with that openness that invites conversations and allows us to react. And when I say react, you brought up something about Tung Fu. Tung Fu isn't about battling. It's not about fighting each other with conversation. It's finding our way to go with the flow of the conversation, correct?
Well said. In fact, once again, let's keep juxtaposing this. And why I do this, by the way, it is the quickest way to make complex ideas crystal clear. Because over on the left-hand column, this is what doesn't work. You know, this actually leads to resistance and resentment. Over on the right is what does work. It leads to receptivity and rapport. So what you're just talking about is Tung Fu and talking on eggshells. Over on the left is reactive. And it's also my agenda. It's what I want, what I think, you know, my outcome. And that's myopic. And over on the right, our agenda. No, how can I ask for this in a way that it's a win for the other person? How can I present this in a way they're thinking, yes, this serves the greater good? So it's our agenda, not my agenda. We're proactive instead of reactive. And I tell you, when we do this, we create these win-win outcomes that are actually a rising tide for all involved.
Right, definitely. Now, we can go in with an open, loving heart, listen, display empathy, compassion, ask questions, and still things can get heated. And conflict's a part of life. Tell us why we should embrace conflict when it happens.
You know, here's what we can do is that over on the left, put conflict and see, Harvard says 67% of people self-identify as conflict averse. That means when a conflict arises, they head the other direction. Right. And, you know, my dentist has a sign in his office that says the 6 most dangerous words in the human language are maybe it will go away. You know, maybe that's 5 words. And conflict will not go away on its own. And if we avoid it, or if we accommodate it, we go along to get along in the hopes that people will be happy or something, that actually rewarded behavior gets repeated, often makes it worse as well. So over on the right, how can we turn a conflict into a clarifying conversation? And do we have time to share a quick story?
Yeah, let's do it.
How we can do that? Because this is how we can embrace conflict instead of avoid it, is if we see it as a clarifying conversation instead of a confrontation. And here are the words to set that up. There's a young woman in her 20s, and Bethany has learning disabilities. It's really been difficult for her to get a job. She finally found one at Salvation Army. She really applied herself. She was in customer service, and she was thrilled when her manager said, "You're up for promotion." The very next day, her manager said, "You're in danger of getting fired." Now, over on the left, before, Bethany would have wilted. She would have retreated and withdrawn. She would have dissolved into tears, maybe quit. She would have gone home, rehashed it, fallen into a depression. Her therapist had given her these words, and she went back in the next day and she said, "Could you please help me understand? Could you please help me understand how I was up for promotion at the beginning of the week and I'm in danger of getting fired today?" And her manager said that a customer had complained and that they tried to return a used mattress and Bethany wouldn't let him. Well, the policy is that it's illegal to take a used mattress with a cover back. And so once the manager realized what had actually happened, she complimented Bethany, gave her the promotion that she deserved. Look at the ripple effect. Avoid conflict, gets worse. Everyone suffers as a result. See it as a clarifying conversation. Ask, "Can you please help me understand?" And often everyone moves forward better because we spoke up instead of headed the other way.
Now, you mentioned in certain situations, some people may avoid. I know that others give in. I know my personality type in Jungian is an intuitor, so I tend to get very emotional and attack. And other people seek control if they're more of a sensor. How do we keep our cool in the heat of the moment, whether we're any of those personality types, so we don't disengage or ruffle more feathers or throw out destructive energy if things don't seem to be going our way?
Well, let's put over on the left, someone takes their anger or frustration out on us. And as you've said, we have a default way of reacting, right? We either get angry or we suffer in silence or we cry and get emotional. None of those help. So here's a situation of where someone's taking their anger, frustration out on us. And then what that person did that completely transformed it and the words that prompted that. So my 84-year-old Aunt Kay volunteers at a hospital 5 days a week. And she did this even during COVID. And I asked, "What was it like?" And she said one word, "Stressful." I said, "Well, put me in the situation of a stressful time." She didn't even have to think about it. She talked about a woman who came running in with her phone, said, "I just got a text from my daughter. She's in the ER. She's been in an accident. I need to get in and see her." Well, Kay called the ER. There was somebody already with the daughter. And Kay had to deliver the bad news to the mother, who lost it and is screaming at Aunt Kay. Now, over on the left, put impatient and put the words, "How rude. How rude. Why are you blaming me? I didn't make the rules. It's not my fault. There's nothing I can do about it." Look at that ripple effect, right? Of when we react to someone, we get impatient. Sometimes we even feel contempt, and we're likely to yell back at the person who's yelling at us. Over on the right, Aunt Kay asked herself four words. How would I feel? How would I feel if my daughter were in the ER and I couldn't get in to see her? And it moved Aunt Kay from impatience to empathy, from contempt to compassion, from "there's nothing I can do" to "let me see if there's something I can do." She called the ER back and she said, "Who is with the daughter?" It was the Uber driver who had brought the young woman in.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, Kay was able to explain the situation to him, thank him, he left, and the mother was able to be with the daughter. And once again, look at the difference between "not my fault, don't blame me" to "how would I feel? Let me see if there's something I can do." And it turned that contempt into compassion.
Now, do you consider that an act of practical grace?
Ah, thank you so much. Yes, practical and proactive grace. Because, you know, Dalai Lama said, when possible, be kind. It is always possible. And, you know, being kind, be compassionate is important. I think, though, it needs to be coupled with action, right? She didn't just empathize with the person. Oh, this must be terrible. I can only imagine how, you know, what it's like. No, empathy is nice. It's not enough on its own. She took action to try and improve the situation, make it better. So that is proactive grace. And that is the river that runs through the book of Talking on Eggshells.
Wonderful. Now, we just had an example about the hospital and an emergency. Now let's go into the office, because I know there's a lot of people in the workplace that don't feel appreciated. They don't feel seen. They don't feel heard. And I've seen stats like in your book, like let's just say about 60% of people don't feel like other people care about them. Yeah. In that situation, what do you do to lift yourself out of that state of not being seen, heard, or appreciated? How do you get yourself noticed in a constructive way that flips the script and gets you the appreciation you deserve through the actions that you take to to have the right skills for these hard conversations?
That's a great question. Over on the left, I hope everyone puts wah, wah, wah. And over on the right, someone puts wish. And over on the left, we put complain. And over on the right, we put create. Because Esther Perel is such a wise woman. And she said, behind every criticism is a veiled wish, right? So see, over on the left, we can complain. I didn't get that project lead that I deserved. I didn't get that promotion that was promised to me. You know, so they're playing favorites. They're, you know, they say yes to so-and-so and they say complaining never got us anywhere, right?
Right.
So what do we wish for? What do we create? And then how can we advocate for ourselves? So once again, we ask. We don't accuse. Put on the left, accuse, right? You didn't give me that promotion you promised me. That's not going to lead to anything constructive. Instead, can you please explain why I didn't get that promotion that was promised to me? And we can advocate even more constructively by saying, I wanted to let you know about, you know, that project where we troubleshooted it. We saw that this was going to backfire. We fixed that before we shipped it. And as a result, you know, we exceeded our quota, our expectations, you know, and looking forward, how can I continue to be recognized and rewarded for the contributions that I'm making to the org? See, we're asking in a way where we're demonstrating our proven bottom line value. It's not just we think we get a raise. No, why do we deserve it in tangible bottom line ways? And then how can we ask for it? So once again, they see that this is in their best interest, not just in ours.
Yeah, that ability to show our value, show our commitment, show our humanity, and ask those questions to uncover, is there a hidden objection or a reason why I'm not progressing? Because it might be as simple as a manager saying to their employee, you know, when you're on meetings, you never have your camera on. It just doesn't look like you're engaged. If you can uncover and understand what the objections are to your growth and why people aren't acknowledging you, there might be one small barrier in your path or your trajectory to growth.
There's a wonderful example of that. And over on the left, put no, is what can we do when we anticipate that someone is not going to be open to what we suggest, that they're going to resist it or say no? And I'll share the example. And then over on the right, exactly what we can do to open someone's mind that's closed, right?
Right.
Because that's not good ISA, is they have a closed mind and we just go in and we hammer away at what we want and how unfair this is and we're not getting what we deserve, right? No, how can we open their mind? So I have an opportunity to consult with a gentleman who is going to pitch his app to the CTO of the London Olympics. And I said, that's great news. I said, you know, how much time do you have? And he said, I have an hour. And I said, Mike, you do not have an hour. Richard Branson said, time is the new money. And I think that time is the new trust. Mm-hmm. And I said, if you want to open this CEO's mind, the first thing you're going to ask yourself is, what is he thinking? And Mike thought about it and he said, he's probably thinking that we're 212 days out from the London Olympics and we don't have time for this. I said, say that.
Right.
Because if you don't say that, he won't be listening. He'll be waiting for you to stop talking so he can tell you why they don't have time for this. So step number one of opening a closed mind and turning a no into a potential yes is anticipate and voice their no. Will they say, we don't have money in our budget for this? Say, you may be thinking, not I know you're thinking, that's presumptuous. You may be thinking, we don't have money in our budget for this. Second step, use the word and instead of but. Because as you know, John Mackey gave the cover endorsement for Talking on Eggshells. He said, this book is the course correct for today's cancel culture. And the lead domino in the cancel culture is the word but. I hear what you're saying, but. You did a good job on that, but. I'd like to help you, but. It's an either or conflict word. If instead we say, and we acknowledge what the person said and advance the conversation instead of anchoring in an argument. So you may be thinking, you know, and then, you know, you're right. And that's why, and one way to turn a closed mind into an open mind is to take less time than they anticipate. So he said, you may be wondering, you know, we don't have time for this. We're 200 twives out. You're right. And that's why I have distilled my pitch from an hour to 10 minutes. And at the end of that time, if you have questions, I welcome them. If you have other priorities. And he said, Sam, I can't distill this. It's so complicated in 10 minutes. I said, Mike, if you don't, he's not listening anyway. In fact, he's resenting you from taking him from his other priorities. The answer is going to be a more of a no. At least this way, he knows he can trust you to always be a good use of his time. He's a lot more likely to want to work with you because you turned a monologue into a dialogue and you showed him you're someone who is sensitive to his priorities and you're always going to honor them.
I love that in terms of the pitch, making sure that we're sensitive to their priorities, bringing them up front in the conversation. You talk, I think, a bit towards the end of your book about earning trust in that pitch, in that first conversation, and also the power of mental imagery and imagination. What role does that play into helping people understand where we're coming from?
I believe that envisioning our first 60 seconds is the shortcut to confidence, because confidence is thinking, I can. And anxiety is thinking, I can't, you know, I don't know if I'm going to be able to win them over. I don't know if they're going to say yes. I don't know. So if we have a fantastic 60 seconds, we can walk in with confidence because we know how to have them at hello. Do we have time to share one of my favorite ways to open almost any communication? Good. So now, you know, the story is that I was the pitch coach for Springboard Enterprises, which has helped entrepreneurs generate $26 billion in funding and valuation. This is Robin Chase's Zipcar, Gail Goodman of Constant Contact, etc. So one of my clients had good news, bad news. What's the good news? I'm pitching in front of a room full of investors at the Paley Center in New York. Great news. What's the bad news? I'm going at 2:30 in the afternoon and I only have 10 minutes. And she said, Sam, you can't say anything in 10 minutes. And I said, you've only got 60 seconds. They will have heard 16 other pitches. So here is a 60-second opening. Now, let's put context over on the left. If we want people to care about what we care about, over on the left, put explain. Do not explain your idea, your startup, your proposal, your product, your program, because explanations are infobesity. Over on the right, here's what she did, and here's what we can do. She said, did you know there are 1.8 billion vaccinations given every year? Did you know up to a third of them are given with reused needles? Did you know we're spreading and perpetuating the very diseases we're trying to prevent? Imagine if there were a painless one-use needle for a fraction of the current cost. You don't have to imagine it. We're doing it, and she's off and running. Are your eyebrows up,
wow,
James?
Let's do it. I'm ready. I'm in.
Okay, now, once again, I hope people are taking notes. Over on the left is explain. Over on the right is ask. Ask three did you know questions with startling statistics that go to the problem you're solving, the issue you're addressing, the need you're meeting, because it's the quickest way to get eyebrows up. I didn't know that. Now they're smarter than they were 20 seconds before. Second step, use the word imagine, because imagine pulls people out of their preoccupation because they're picturing your point. They're seeing what you're saying. So imagine this and this and this. And then people are going, sounds good. Why wouldn't we want that?
Right.
Third step is you don't have to imagine it. We're doing it. Now come in with your precedence and your evidence to show this isn't pie in the sky or speculative. This is a done deal and you and your team are ready to produce it.
That's awesome. Now let's go big picture for a minute and look at people in our life and let's bring it back into the home. Sometimes we can feel like with friends or family, someone's trying to be manipulative or forceful, or they're a little bit of a bully. And what can we do to try to change those people?
You know, as you can tell, I believe that words matter. Words have ripple effects. And so often on the left is we tell people what we don't want is stop bossing me around, right? Stop interrupting me, you know, stop taking out your bad day on me. It's, you know, stop being so careless, you know, it's all of that. And it actually reinforces the very thing we don't want. So here's one of my favorite examples about how we can use words that plant action seeds of what we do want instead of what we don't. It's I was visiting my son, Andrew, in New York, and his one-year-old son, Hero, crawls across the floor, hauls himself up on a guitar that's on a stand in the corner. He starts banging on the strings. Now, over on the left, Andrew could have said no. He could have said, stop banging on the strings. He could have yanked the guitar away. James, guess what he did instead?
What's that?
He said one word, gentle. And I saw Hero's face transform in front of me. And he reached back to the guitar and went strum, strum, strum.
Wow.
And he made music in that moment because Andrew shaped his behavior instead of shamed it. He coached him on how to do it right instead of criticizing him for doing it wrong. And he made him feel better instead of making him feel bad. So I think one way we can be a pattern interrupt is if someone is not behaving in a way we want, instead of using the word stop doing this, now what do we want him to start doing? Instead of criticizing him for doing it wrong, how can we coach him to do it right? Instead of making him feel bad by telling him no, no, how can we actually ask for how they can do it better in a way that serves them and us?
Now, this young child that was strumming that guitar is now growing up in a world of blended realities, social media, technology, and all of these influences. What's your hope for the future of soft skills education, social education, its importance to our children, our youth, and also, too, why people should grab this book and what they can get out of it?
What I hope people get out of this book and what I hope for Hero and what I hope for everyone who comes to my programs and reads the book is that we understand that we have agency, is that we can complain about the world and the snark and how divisive it is, and that doesn't change things. Instead, I believe in being a rising tide person and leader. We go first. We set the example. Albert Schweitzer said that in influencing others, example is not the main thing. It's awesome. The only thing. And see, I think that when we set the example for respect and compassion and proactive grace, that people are motivated to respond in kind.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. And where can people learn more about you and where can they grab the book?
You know, we made it real easy. It's Sam Horn is my website. My TEDx talks, my books are on there, some blogs, etc. So samhorn.com. I hope people follow me on LinkedIn because I blog every week on what I'm seeing in the world and new, fresh ways for us to be a rising tide person who's a pattern interrupt for good. And of course, they can get the book at any of the major bookstores online and independent or Amazon.
Thank you so much. You've been a phenomenal guest, and I appreciate you so much. And everyone, be sure to grab a copy of Talking on Eggshells, Soft Skills for Hard Conversations. Thank you again.